Yeah, sorry for being late, folks. I went to sleep after eating dinner, so I think I forgot. So you're all very welcome here tonight, and I'll start off with introductory remarks. I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure that their mobile phones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of a mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for the discussion of in-committee items. I remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significantly non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please ensure either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared that interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where councillors considered any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphones work as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have preference. Flashing green is next in the queue, and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red, as you will lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in attendance virtually, and as it has been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought to in to speak on an issue before any remote delegates. Therefore, if you are attending remotely, please use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in once all those within the chamber have spoken. Instant message should be kept to the following letters: type Q for question, C for a comment, P if you wish to propose, S if you wish to second, and please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. So first of all, I would like to welcome the delegations from the Housing Investment Plan, is that the title? Yep. And I'm not sure what way you want to do this. Do you want to just do it individually, or?
Chair, we're happy to. I'm happy to consider the presentation.
Okay.
And then if there are questions, the team are here as well to answer questions.
Okay, thank you.
Apologies first.
What are the apologies? Any apologies?
Yeah, yes, we have apologies from Councillors Clark, Finn, McGuinness, and from Marie Ward, Chief Executive, and from Aileen Jones, the Director of Corporate Services.
Any other?
Connor, Mallon, and Andy Patterson as well.
Any others?
Yes, there are apologies from Councillor Alan Lewis.
Right, so from, apologies from Valerie Hart. Did you hear me there, Glenn?
Yes, I did hear you, yeah.
Alright, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so move on there now.
Thank you, Chair. If we can just show the presentation, I'm happy to move it on. Thank you. Okay, well, look, firstly, I just want to say thank you very much for inviting us along here. It's great to be at the Council here tonight. We did supply you in advance with the Housing Investment Plan. It covers quite a broad range of areas. So what I'm going to do is take you through some of the key highlights, and then there will be an opportunity for members to answer questions. The team here tonight are John McCartan, Chair Creaney, and Sinead Collins. And I think some of the members may know some of the team, but they cover a broad range. John is our regional manager.
Okay.
Claire works with John, and Sinead is our head of place shaping. Okay. So as I say, Chair, you have the plan. And I suppose one of the first things I think is important to point out is that we see ourselves as a key partner with the Council. We work very closely with the Council across a number of areas, one of the most important being the community planning process. So we chair the Housing Needs Working Group and work very closely with the Council in doing that. We also engage with reps from across the seven DEAs, particularly around the issues of rural housing need. And to try to encourage the development of any opportunities around land. So it's a statutory consultation in the local development plan. And we also work with the council to develop policies, and you'll be aware of those, in the draft land strategy, and that was launched in June 26. Really, the whole point is for us to work in partnership so that the area, so that we can do as much as possible for the area in terms of the identification of land and schemes. And the policies that we have worked on should enable the provision of affordable housing within mixed tenure developments in both urban and rural areas for the council. So what I'd like to cover in the presentation tonight, just at a very high level, is the local housing context, some of those challenges, and I'm sure all members will be aware of the many housing challenges that we face, or investment that we invested in the area for 25-26, or planned investment for 26-27, and we don't have all of the information at this stage because we still have to wait and see, for example, for our new build programme, what our final budget will be. And I think it's also important to look at housing opportunities for us to feed in to housing development, housing supply, and I'll cover some of those. I think one of the most important things is that when you go through the presentation, I think it becomes very, very clear what the housing challenges are right across the board. When you look at need, you look at identified need, and you look at what we can supply and what there is in the programme. And that leads to a number of issues, but I'll cover those just at the end. So in terms of housing tenure breakdown for the Newry, Mourne and Down council area, we have 68,398 households. And the Housing Executive manage a stock of 5,152 homes, and we did have a small number in 25-26, a small number of house sales were completed. And you can see there, Chair, the breakdown of the tenure in terms of owner occupation, private rented and social rented for the area. In terms of the 15-year housing market assessment, what does that mean for the council? So the housing supply strategy 2024-39 recognises that meeting housing need is not just about social housing, but increasing the supply of homes across all tenures. And that means we need a coordinated system-wide approach. So over 10,600 additional homes will be needed in the Newry, Mourne and Down district by 2035. That includes 6,540 market homes, 1,570 intermediate or affordable homes, and 2,520 social homes. And that is right across urban and rural communities. What that means is that we need a joined-up approach between planning, infrastructure, housing providers and local government. And we continue to use evidence to inform housing investment, land requirements and future housing supply. So in terms of the waiting list trends from 23 to 26, you will see from the waiting list there is really high demand for social housing right across the district, and that is reflected in our waiting list, in housing stress and in homelessness levels. So the current annual social housing allocation equates to around 12% of households in housing stress, and that's really, really important to know, to understand that. In terms of supply then, from 26 to 29, the programme had 339 units of new social housing, which included 189 urban units and 150 rural units. In terms of performance across 5 years, the target during the period was 981 starts, split down into 543 urban, 438 rural. 331 starts were achieved against that target, which was 650 lower. And you can see the split of that as well in terms of urban and rural. And right across the board, delivery is always constrained by availability of land in the areas of housing need, by planning, by infrastructure limitations, and uncertainty in terms of the annual budget allocations. In terms of intermediate, rent co-ownership had an active stock of 599 homes at the end of March 26, and 28 of those were bought during 25-26. And you'll be aware that the scheme under construction at St Clair's Convent in Newry, with Choice, includes 18 two-bedroom apartments for intermediate, and that will be managed by the subsidiary Maple and May. So rural housing need for the district, as of March 26, there were 1,340 applicants on the social housing waiting list for rural areas. 1,101 of those applicants were in housing stress, 939 full-duty homeless applicants, and 131 allocations of social homes in rural areas, and that was in the year from April to the end of March. So the five-year social housing need is 946 for rural areas, 39% of total need for the district. In terms of 25-26, one new build scheme was completed in Camlock, and two schemes are on site, Fort Hill and St Field, and eight rural schemes are on the list for 26-29, and that's around 150 units. So I think all of that information, and there's a lot more detail in your housing investment plan itself, but I think the challenges are really clear. Every member here will be aware of them. The budget requirements for what we need and what we get to build, there are shortfalls. There's uncertainty around our long-term future in terms of our own ability to maintain our stock and modernise our stock and invest particularly in decarbonisation works. We have a continuing high level of social waiting list applicants and housing stress, and you will read about that, I'm sure, constantly, and you know about it in your district. The levels of homelessness remain high, and there is an ongoing demand for temporary accommodation and emergency accommodation. There is a shortage of social and affordable housing across urban and rural areas, and wastewater infrastructure constraints and the impact that has on new housing development remains. And there are many housing challenges which have an impact on health and wellbeing. And I think, again, Chair, through the years, the evidence of the effect that a home has on health and wellbeing is evident. In terms of spend for 25-26, we did invest £53.37 million, and we did invest £6.28 million in new build. And you'll see the breakdown of that spend, that £53 million, and the different areas that it was spent in and invested in. There were new homes on site in the last year. In 25-26, we did invest the £6.28 million. There were 39 new social homes completed, 435 under construction at the end of March, and there are 339 units, as I said earlier, included in the programme for 26-29. In terms of planned maintenance completed, we have a breakdown there of where the money was spent. About £6.55 million was invested in maintenance and improvement in 868 homes and 975 units included in 28 planned schemes across 26-27. I mentioned earlier, I think it's very evident the challenges that we have. There are some opportunities as well to make sure that we can invest as much as possible. So we've had an initial budget secured for 26-27 of £208 million, and that has enabled us to engage with the housing associations right across the board to look at what schemes are available and what schemes can be brought forward. We had a public consultation this year, you will be aware, on the five proposed amendments to the statutory house sale scheme, because as you are aware, we are still selling houses from our stock. The rural strategy for 26-31 was launched with an emphasis on the provision of affordable housing. We have surveyed our own stock, which is just being completed at the minute, to make sure we know absolutely, are very clear, know our investment requirement going forward. Because even since we have had our last survey done, so many things have changed. And we need to be very clear about what our investment requirement is We have secured funding for the new foundations programme. As you know, that's about young people leaving care to avoid homelessness. And URI has been identified as a priority target area. We do have a public consultation coming out on the draft homelessness strategy in the autumn. So again, an opportunity to shape that. And our low carbon retrofit pilot is underway to improve energy efficiency, reduce carbon emissions, and again, that's important for us right across Northern Ireland. The Warm Healthy Home Strategy will be coming out as well with a new Warm Healthy Homes Fund to reduce fuel poverty. You'll be aware the Affordable Warmth Scheme is what is in existence at the minute. That is coming to an end, and the new Warm and Healthy Homes Fund will be coming into play to bring a new set of measures to help to make sure that we address fuel poverty. As I said, Chair, I think the key thing is when you look at all of the information right across the board in terms of supply, the key issues are housing supply. We need housing supply. And that goes across every issue that we have. If you look at homelessness, if you look at the waiting list, if you look at those in housing stress, housing supply and securing housing supply is key. For ourselves, in terms of being able to continue to maintain our stock to the levels that we need to make sure that we are providing people with decent homes, you have heard us talk for many years about revitalisation. And that one will enable us to borrow and to make sure that we can secure maximum planned maintenance and response maintenance to maintain our homes over 30 years. And we have a plan set out to do that. Our stock survey that we are just completing at the minute, that will feed into that picture to update that so that we know exactly what we need for the next 30 years. So look, Chair, I know that the members are familiar with the local team. I know that I've covered a lot of issues there. I know we've given you a very comprehensive plan, and we're very happy to answer questions that you would have on any of those elements, because that's really just the highlights from the detailed plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. It was a really a very good overview, so it was, and sure. Questions from the floor. So, anyone have any questions? Councillor Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just want to thank you very much for that presentation. And we do know the excellent work that our local housing executive team do, and working with Claire and the rest of the team. Yeah, have to commend the local team and everything. Very responsive to the problems and issues that maybe come up, and yeah, definitely good. There is something I would be frustrated about, and I know you've highlighted the shortage of houses is probably the biggest problem. And some of our estates there, you would have like, I know they're privately owned, but they're like abandoned property basically. And I know we probably don't have the legislation at the moment to be able to do anything about that. But I can think of one area. There's at least four or five in a very small area, and within that estate, I mean, it's just crying out for those houses to be redeveloped, especially with the need that there is. So is there any moves, or has there been any new legislation suggested, or is there any moves to try to help those, or not help, but possibly contact those privately owned owners that aren't clearly doing anything with these properties for years to try and help those areas? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, look, absolutely. I think there's been discussion over many years about empty homes and the difference that, you know, possible difference maybe that being able to address the issue of empty homes could make. I know it has been talked about in the department. Obviously, that's a departmental, that will be a departmental policy and change. However, it is something I know has been talked about, and in terms of taking issues back to the department to feed in, I'm more than happy to have a conversation about where all of that sits at this point in time and come back to you, Chair, because I honestly don't know where the discussion sits, but I know there has been discussion, I think, across many councils as well, and I'm certainly happy to chase that up.
Thank you. Okay. Donna?
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks very much for the presentation. I made the mistake of printing it out earlier on. I think I've killed a couple of trees by doing that, but it was very comprehensive, and it's good information to have, not least all the contact details as well. And I know I would deal a lot, nodding at Claire, around the Downpatrick area and the Downpatrick office, and staff are just exemplary. They're so, so good coming back to me with the queries. I suppose in terms of something that jumped out at me was the 285 units in Downpatrick that are needed, but that demand isn't going to be met from what I can see anytime soon. So how do we start to bridge the gap there in terms of that? And, you know, I think the thing that worries me is the housing stress as well. You know, when you're starting to hear of different families all living under the one roof, it feels like you're going back into a time, you know, from the past that people have to live like that now. You know, it's just when we're looking at health inequalities and better outcomes, that can't be good for any family or any, you know, I suppose like friends even, to be having to live in that situation. I know obviously the Down is nearly ready to complete well within the year, and I'm hoping that that will help Downpatrick along a lot. But I suppose the rural areas too, you know, I have a lot of people coming to me looking for social housing, St. Clock and Arglass, Strangford, but again, it never seems to have moved on. I know in one of the earlier meetings when I was first a councillor 7 years ago and talked about latent demand and encouraging people to put down their area of choice, but that doesn't really seem to have moved on very much either. So I suppose it's just, I suppose, to how do we start to address these issues?
I'm glad you're here.
You're all right.
Thank you. Look, there are a whole pile of issues in there, and really the heart of the issue is, you know, how do we make sure there are enough homes for people? So I'm going to bring Sinead in a minute or two, but I think there's such a big connection between housing and health. There really is. And look, part of our, even part of our own corporate plan sets out that connection between housing and health. And there are a number of things that I suppose there are a number of things that we can do, but I think the answer is much wider than us. I know the new housing supply strategy has been launched, and that's a departmental strategy that certainly we feed into, and rural areas, I know, is a big issue when it comes to the identification of land and schemes. And I think, Sinead, you'll have a bit more detail in terms of some of the bridging the gap and some of the issues around rural areas.
Yes. So at the minute, at March 2026, the waiting list for Downpatrick showed 504 first preference applicants. 427 of those were in housing stress. But over the preceding 12-month period between April 2025 and March 26, there were only 41 allocations of a social home. And given that the housing executive has a stock of 623 homes, you can see that there's a really low turnover of existing social housing stock, which drives up the need for new supply within the town. As you said, Carmel Housing Association are on site at the minute with the Down Hospital, and that'll be 66 units. We have another apartment scheme for Patrick Street included in the programme for 27-28. That's 15 units to be developed by Arbor. So St. Patrick Street?
St. Patrick's Avenue.
Apologies. Must be. Yeah. I'll check that. But there is a 15-unit apartment scheme on the programme for Downpatrick for 27-28. I mean, our key mechanism for engaging with housing associations would be through our Housing Development Commission, and that would set out our requirements over the next 5 years in terms of the housing need, and also highlight the type and mixes of homes that we require, you know, to reflect the waiting list, the profile of households on the waiting list. But we engage with housing associations then on a day and daily basis to try and promote where housing is required. In terms of rural areas, obviously
Newry Morning Down, the rural housing need in Newry Morning Down is the heart of rural housing need right across Northern Ireland. And actually the lack of delivery against that need, against the strategic targets, drives up the rural strategic target for the whole of Northern Ireland. So that is a real area of focus for us. There were only 29 units developed over the last 5 years against the target of 438, which really underlines the issue there. But I mean, at the minute we have a programme which includes 150 units, which I think is really positive, and a couple of big schemes that we're also looking at in the likes of Bessbrook that haven't made it as far as the programme yet. So this year we engaged with local councillors through the DEAs just to try and promote the need for, I suppose, partnership work and identifying sites. But the game changer for us, the real opportunity, is in the local development plan and the draft plan strategy. And we work closely with the council there in developing the policy, particularly COU3, which will put the onus on to private developers to include affordable housing within every scheme, and we're starting to see the benefits of that in other council areas where those policies have been put in place.
Well, that's something else, Erin, I know. Yeah, Catherine wants to say.
Chair, just wanted to come back just to your very first point, because you said, you know, what can we do? There's a sort of bigger picture as well, and that is just making sure that housing is always a priority in the programme for government. Because obviously funding flows from the programme for government. So I think just working together, making sure that housing is a priority in the programme for government, making sure that then there is that recognition about right across the board about how important housing is, through education, through health, to all of the things that affect people every day. And making sure then for us that we work in partnership, and she just mentioned there, for example, working with councils, maybe looking at, you know, how can we identify land? Is there other things we can do sort of outside our normal processes with maybe that would maybe bring opportunities to do things a bit differently and maybe identify sites? So I think, as well as, you know, we will certainly and always do, as you know, put our shoulder to the wheel and make sure we're doing as much as possible in terms of our work with housing associations. However, I think it's also important at that higher level to make sure there's always a priority in the programme for government so that we can try to make sure we're securing as much funding as possible, because funding needs to, you know, fund supply. It also needs to fund things like wastewater and, you know, there are other issues connected with housing, and that's why I'm saying we need to, you know, make sure we're working together to get all of those things funded. So there's sort of different layers, or sort of that layer, and then sort of the local, what we can do locally to make sure we're doing as much as possible.
Thank you. Just before we move on from that, there's one thing there. It is really alarming. 29 in the rural area, you know, that's extremely alarming. I know that, especially in the farming industry, it's inclined to be hidden quite a bit, because families are sure if the house is big enough, they'll all, maybe two families in the one house. Are they on the housing list, or are they just... Because renting houses is very expensive, very, very expensive in the countryside, because there's so many, you know, beds set out for tourism and money, and it's actually creating a problem. Is there anything can be done with that there? You know, just... Is it just simply because planning is so difficult to get in the countryside, or to get land, or what is the problem?
Well, I suppose there's a combination of constraints. It's the availability of land where we need it within the settlement limits, and then obviously infrastructure constraints and the capacity issues with Northern Ireland Water are well documented, particularly for rural Newry Morning Down. There's policies in place, the exceptions policy at the minute under PPS 21. There's opportunities there landowners, you know, can contact housing associations, and that's what we're really encouraging landowners and developers to do, to kind of unlock those opportunities. But in terms of people, us fully capturing the extent of the demand or the latent demand, you know, we can only work with the evidence that we have, so people have to come forward and put their name on the waiting list, and that's the only way that we can fully capture that demand. But I mean, the demand that we do have evidence of right across Newry, one and down, you know, it's not an issue of capturing that need. We're identifying opportunities to meet that need. In the likes of Castlewellan, the Castlewellan has the highest rural need of any rural settlement right across Northern Ireland. There's a requirement for 125 homes, and it's really unlikely that we could ever meet that demand within the settlement limits of Castlewellan. So we'll have to look at opportunities in and around Castlewellan, and one of those opportunities that we're considering is in Arnsborough, which is just a mile down the road but doesn't have the same evidence of demand. And we're working with a housing association there. So I suppose just always looking at possibilities and potentials to make to bring on that supply. Yeah.
The point I was trying to make is a lot of those son and maybe his wife and family, they're not inclined to go after the housing executive to the same extent. They're really dependent on, you know, finding some accommodation themselves. It's just not the nature of the people. Just the other thing I would just sort of highlight to you, and I know in Kilkeel there's one development in particular that the only reason planners won't let it go ahead simply because of the DFI and getting rid of the sewage, really, so they can. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you're going to sort this problem all out, so I don't know, to be quite honest with you, but there is quite a need. I know I have a few other questions here, but I know I'm supposed to wait to the last before I'm supposed to ask it. Here's a Councillor Bowser.
Thank you. I just echo what Johnny and Una have said, the great work that the department do. The maintenance teams as well. In relation to local the point system, this is probably something of a national level, but hopefully you can feed back. Firstly, it's good to see that the intimidation points has been removed. I give an example of Sandfield. I have people ringing, particularly people over 55 ringing, wanting housing locally, and they can't get enough points to get a house in their own village, and yet people 100 miles away with more points can get it. And so I wonder whether a system whereby you can maybe add 10 or 20 points on to people on the basis of have lived in a certain proximity for X amount of years, that they deserve maybe a few more points. As I say, it's quite outrageous that this Fairview and Sandfield people that have never stepped foot in Sandfield are going to get priority over people in Sandfield that have waited for years, if not decades, for housing. And so a scheme whereby points can be awarded to people that have a proven residency in Sandfield, I think, would be a good idea. Wastewater, be good to get some facts and figures on wastewater. What are the areas that are hampered by wastewater? Different agencies seem to say different things on that, whether it is the main factor that's causing a blockage on development. And just one pernickety thing in relation to how you group settlements, it makes no sense that Kilmore and Loughlin Ireland are together and Crossgar and Annacloy are together, because we have 71 in Crossgar and Annacloy, two completely different areas, and we don't know then the real need in Crossgar when that should be with Kilmore, and Loughlin Ireland and Annacloy should be together, and that would also reflect the DAs. Thank you.
Chair, just other than to say the point scheme is set out in legislation, so, you know, it's not actually possible to just make changes. That obviously is something that that is agenda set by the department. So there's not really much you can say there in terms of wastewater. Yeah, look, it's something that we have a very, very heavy engagement with Northern Ireland Water on. We've a really close working relationship, right down to individual scheme level. We meet with them constantly, and we absolutely try to do as much as possible to resolve issues. However, our role is very, very limited. But I think the important thing for us is to maintain that relationship, to understand what is going on, to understand reasons behind decisions, and to make sure that the case is always made. So, but as I say, that's a very limited role because there obviously are issues that we cannot resolve.
Okay. Hi for Andrews.
Thanks so much, Chair. And first, I'd like to thank the team for coming along this evening to give us an input and a presentation on how they see the housing investment plan and how it's going to move forward, which is to be welcomed. And also, I echo the sentiments of previous speakers. I would like to pay tribute to Brona McGowan and the staff in Downpatrick and for the excellent work that they do, and also for the relationship, good relationships built up over the years with the team in Downpatrick. So, and I must say that they're to be applauded for what they do. You know, previous speakers that outlined the waiting lists for so many people, and especially with families, so young families crying out to PTs. I'm sure every councillor in this chamber this evening has a list as long as their arms on people who have contacted them in dire need, you know, for housing. I know young couples losing their homes because of not able to make ends meet, as the saying goes, and also with the exorbitant cost of private rentals that has gone through the roof in recent times. And I do welcome very much the powers that have been granted to the executive to rebuild houses and property. And I know in the Republic of Ireland, and both the central government, the Department of Housing and local government, and the local authorities in the 26 counties are working in tandem to get housing. For example, a lot of brownfield sites, derelict sites, etc., even abandoned developments are being utilised for housing. And I'm just wondering, in that regard, is the Housing Executive, along with the housing associations, especially with the powers that the Housing Executive have got back again in relation to building properties and houses, you know, to deal with the chronic housing waiting lists? You know, I mean, have there any plans in moving those forward? You know, and I know the previous speaker and constituency colleague, Councillor Bowsey, did raise his issue on the point system. And I'm wondering, since that changes were announced by the Minister, I'm just wondering what sort of an impact has those changes regarding the points been, its impact? And also, I feel strongly that there is a democratic deficit that I think local councillors right across the 11 authorities should have more of an input and say into the decision making, let alone at housing, also health, education, and other areas that have an impact on everyday living. But I'll leave my sermon. I could be here all night, and sure everybody else could. But I'll not inflict that on you. But I just want to raise a few points with you in regard to that. But thank you very much for listening.
Thanks. Alan, do you want to respond?
Very generally, Chair.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a number of issues there, but there are sort of, even when you talk about, I think we're maybe one of the things you alluded to is probably what Councillor Jackson raised there earlier in terms of empty homes and looking at those. We would work very closely with the housing associations, for example, at local levels to identify any voids in the properties that we do have control of, or our own stock, the housing association stock, again, for the same purposes of making sure that whatever stock we do manage and control, we are using to absolute maximum capacity. And that's how we do that. In terms of the point system, I think I've already addressed that. And the only other thing I would say is that, as far as we are concerned, if we have policy changes and the department has policy changes, most of the, or, you know, key policy changes would go out to public consultation. And hopefully you would have the opportunity to feed into that. Our homeless strategy, for example, has come out in the autumn, and we'll be wanting a lot of, you know, feedback into that, because that's exactly what we want. We want policy to be shaped by the feedback, and that's one of the reasons we go out to consultation, just to make sure that that is actually the case. I'm not sure. I think, Chair, that's just a very general high-level overview, and I do understand you will have many housing issues. I mean, we hear them every single day. We know how difficult things are. We know you as members have a really difficult job, and our staff and the Housing Executive have a really difficult job as well, because we totally understand people's issues. So I get what you're saying. You could be here for a lot longer, but hopefully you'll work with the local teams. And I know we don't have the answers to everything, because we're not funded to have the answers. In terms of, sorry, one other thing I should have said, in terms of new build, we have delivered one pilot in Belfast, and that was 6 houses to pass a high standard, and that's the extent of our dipping our toes into new build at this point in time. So it is our new build programmes delivered to the housing associations.
Okay, David.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you so much for your team coming and for all the work that you do. I'm sure you're all probably sick of my emails, to be honest. but thank you so much for responding to them so promptly and professionally. When it comes to the housing needs, sometimes I think to places like Singapore, during the 60s, 50s and 60s, where there are loads of people with no homes living in huts and shelters, and the government, build these high rises. Now, I don't propose that we have them here in Northern Ireland because they're a bit of an eyesore, but is there any, from your own research, are there any desires for multi-unit properties like so Redwood and Derriachi, for example, which Housing Association bought 2 out of the 3 apartment blocks, and there were 8 stories. Is there your own research, like any desire for them here in New Moore and Down? And then question number 2 would be, would you know, going to various councils and doing your presentations, is there a desire from your point of view of councils to write to the minister for communities to talk about the point system? Because I think what Councillor Bice proposed is a great idea, where local people should get an additional point added to their application. Thank you.
Okay.
You want to respond to that, Phil?
First of all, in terms of research for new types of properties, I think that's something that we always have an eye to in working with the housing associations, because what we want to do at all times is try and maximise what we can get out of the money that is invested. So whatever budget we get, we absolutely try to do that, looking at need, looking at types of property, and make sure that we do get as much as possible for that money that is invested. In terms of research across new types, I'm not sure unless Sinead or John, are you aware of anything that has been looked at?
Maybe not so much research into new types of accommodation, although I would say that we have a high number of apartments within the current programme for Newry Morning Down, particularly in Newry. But we have to manage this very carefully, because obviously the preferred house type, especially for families, is a traditional house. So we have something like 250 apartment units included in the programme, on-site and completed and in the programme for Newry. But we want to carefully monitor the allocations of those, because we want to support sustainable communities on a long-term basis. Obviously, smaller households grow into larger households. It's a very transient household group. So we will always consider a small number of 1 and 2 bed properties, apartments, but manage that within a robust housing mix of different house types within a development.
Great.
Yeah. Coming up, David. Mm-hmm. You were in there, Sam. So I'm going to go to the Councillor Tuesday. She's still there.
I am. Thank you very much. Thanks very much for the presentation and the plan. Undoubtedly, it's a high pressurised department. And we have an older population as well starting to come through, which will require single bedroom housing as well, which is difficult. The point system, I just want to echo the sentiments that Councillor Bousy and my colleague Dave said as well. I'm in Newcastle. So it's a very popular place for people to want to have a home in, but yet we see our young people having to leave because the house prices are through the roof and there's very little social housing coming through. My question, I think you've probably already touched on it when you said about the keeping the housing priority on the programme for government. It's just that the whole plan and the housing supply strategy for this district and probably right throughout all councils is secures, which are stuck in Treasury negotiations and have been for a while. So just at a departmental level and from what you're hearing, is there a plan B if those powers are not granted? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Look, the Treasury negotiations and the raising of the awareness of the importance of the Housing Executive being able to borrow to invest in its stock is something that really is at a much more advanced level than I've ever seen at this point in time. So we have a level of income that we have through rent. We have a level that we need to invest in our homes to keep those to a decent standard, and we have a gap in the middle. So how that gap is filled has to be through either upfront subsidy, and the budget, you know, is very, very constrained at this point in time, or borrowing, or a combination of borrowing, upfront subsidy and rent. So rent has to be at an affordable level and at an appropriate level to make sure we can invest in our homes. And even with that, there still is a gap that has to be filled to make sure we can invest. So is there a plan B? The plan B is simply to invest the money we have, no matter what form that comes in, whether it comes through borrowing, whether it comes through subsidy, and the money that currently comes from rent and will continue to come from rent. We just have to do what we can with that. The other thing we do on the other side of making sure that we can invest as much as we can in our homes is to make sure that the money we are spending in the Housing Executive, we constantly look at how can we deliver our services more efficiently, effectively? Are there new ways of delivering services? Can we use IT? How can we make sure that we are getting as much as possible out of every penny that we spend? So we do a lot of work, which we report on formally as well, a lot of work in behind the scenes that you will never see, that is making sure that we do work as efficiently as possible and reporting those efficiencies to make sure that we are releasing money. Our job is to make sure that we spend as much as possible in investing in our homes and as little as possible in behind the scenes. So we try and do that. We try and balance that all the time and do a major programme of work, making sure that we are getting as many efficiencies as possible. That's a constant job for us. It's a job for every single manager in the organisation and right across the organisation. You'll never see or hear about it. But there's a number of things at play here. And I think all we can do, our plan B, is to do as much as possible with what we have, until we see how those negotiations are going to progress. I have to say, they have progressed really far. And I know through the years there were a number of iterations of the revitalisation programme. This is one that has been taken through the Department of Finance, through Treasury, to a level that we haven't seen before. So we are hopeful.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Catherine. And can we just give a shout out to the local teams down here across Mourne as well? They're all absolutely brilliant, very professional, always on the end of the phone. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Riley.
Thanks very much, Chairman. Thank you, Mrs. McFarland, for your presentation. I know that all your staff do try their best for the local communities that they serve. I was startled to see that out of your 56 million budget for Newry, Mourne and Down, 27 million of it is already ring fenced for housing benefit. You know, I didn't know that the housing benefit actually came out of your budget. I thought that was through the health or social services. There's one point that Councillor Jackson mentioned there about vacant homes, and obviously we would be around housing estates and whatever on a fairly regular basis, and you do see houses where there's loads of mail going to, postal mail, and obviously there's somebody is in theory living in that house, but there's nobody really living in it. And the terminology that I was told was, it's called a brew drop, where somebody who's getting benefits will use an address, but they don't actually live there. And you know, that's very frustrating for people who would love to live in those areas. And another thing, Mr. McFarland, I'm the council's veterans representative, you know, for ex-service personnel. And people coming, leaving service, mostly in GB, find it very, very difficult to get a house back home. And I've already been advised that you can't give any additional points to ex-servicemen because of Section 75 of the 98 Act, where you can't give preference to any individual. But I have a soldier living down here who is desperate to get back to Belfast. And he asked me to ask this question. The man who tried to behead the person in North Belfast was actually a refugee who had got living in an assisted housing facility. You know, and how can that happen so quickly for a refugee whenever somebody who served their country and is desperate to get moved back to that area can't get anything, either in the private sector or with the housing executive? It just seems very frustrating. How could that actually happen, that somebody can get so much preference to be housed so quickly? But can I also ask your opinion on the measures that Gordon Lyons, the Communities Minister, brought through on increasing tenants' rights and tenure? I think that is a really good move to improve the right of renters to, you know, give them that extra security, because I've seen some terrible situations where people have been in house for maybe a year, 18 months, and the owner just gives them a month's notice to get out because they're going to get more money somewhere else. So if you could answer those few points, I'd be very grateful. But again, I would thank you for the work that you do. Thank you.
Catherine, do you want to do more of that?
Okay, thank you.
Don't know, any questions from you?
I've got them. Right, okay, so housing benefit, first of all. The information's on there just in terms of how much housing benefit spend which in the district, which does not come out of our budget. There are two different types of funding, Amy and Dale. They're technical terms, but effectively we're not in competition for spend between housing benefit and other elements of spend in the area, because, for example, our spend on response and planned maintenance comes out of our rental income. There's no rental income spent on housing benefit. That is funded entirely separately. So that's just there just for information, but there is no competition in terms of spending our money, the money that we have. In terms of, I think you alluded to the issue of tenancy fraud there, and I think, I mean, we would have quite a few. We have a significant tenancy fraud unit, and we have quite a few reports that would come anonymously and not anonymously through our We've Reported Fraud on our website. We would have information that comes through our local offices. And I think, if there is any suspicion, then bring the address and we certainly have a look. And some cases turn out to be tenancy fraud and some cases turn out not to be. However, we would get quite a few reports through any number of mechanisms that we have. So just continue to do that. In terms of the points scheme and your point about veterans and points that have been raised before, we work within the points scheme that is there at the minute. So individual cases obviously would not be able to comment on But all I would say is, you know, the points are allocated according to the scheme, and that's the limit of our role. That's all we can do, is make sure that when somebody comes to us, applies for housing, they get the correct allocation of points, and that's, I'd say, that's as much as we are allowed to do within our remit. In terms of then tenants' rights, yes, the minister, the minister has brought forward regulations, and again, we would be, you know, we support anything that gives more security of tenure, because a lot of our work actually in the housing executive, again, that is unseen, is about tenancy sustainment. It's about trying to keep people in their tenancy, in their homes, just to make sure that people don't fall out into homelessness, that we try and protect tenancies as much as possible and help people to maintain those tenancies. We invest a lot in financial inclusion, for example, to help people. We have patch managers, or system of patch managers, that would work very closely with households as well. So we, our whole rationale for a lot of our work is about sustaining tenancies, and we do invest quite a lot in that. And I think that's it, Chair. I don't think there's nothing I would like to comment on individual cases. So.
You're having enough there, Henry? You must be on mute.
Yeah, well, I know you can't speak in social cases, but just in the broader aspect of it, you know, how can an asylum seeker who's just arrived get accommodation very quickly when an ex-serviceman who's, you know, done 10 years in the military and lived through some terrible experiences, how are they not accommodated? It just seems very unfair to me.
And again, Charlotte, that gets back to the point system. I don't know individual circumstances, so it gets back to the allocation of points.
Yeah,
okay, thank you.
I'll let you in, Councillor Bajie.
Thank you. Just on from housing rights, there's another case locally, but has something that needs, I think, addressed nationally, is housing being transferred to perhaps a son or a daughter of someone that's maybe got into a nursing home. I had a case locally of someone who had been living in a house for 50 years, and as soon as his mum had to go into a nursing home, the paperwork hadn't been signed over. She would have been happy to do so if she had the chance, and he has now had to leave his home after 50 years. So that process needs sharpened up. You mentioned 20 kitchen replacements, and that seems very low in the grand scale of the district. Can you just confirm that anybody that has got a kitchen that clearly needs replaced, that they are entitled to that, and that there's no hurdles there, because I would have a lot of people that would say they would need a kitchen replaced. You know, close to 20 myself in the area. Would want to just comment on a suggestion by Councillor Andrews there, that councillors should be given greater involvement in the allocation process, and just to say that I'd be very wary of that trajectory. The SDLP of all parties will know about the context of the Housing Executive 1973, and I think the point system, despite its flaws and the suggestions to improve it, is the best we've got at this time.
Yeah, just to say, Chair, succession is a major issue right across every council area, and again, we are constrained by the policy framework within which we work. I know that housing, and you'll be aware of this probably more than me, the housing council are doing a piece of work at the minute where they've invited along the department, invited along ourselves, invited along housing associations to have discussion around succession. And I think then they'll be taking forward a piece of work on the back of that. So I know there's been quite a lot of, you will have a housing, you know, a rep on the housing council. So they are obviously very interested. There are many issues, and they will take something forward then coming out of those meetings. Those meetings are happening at the minute and have been over the last few months. So we are really aware of succession. In terms of our programme, I know Andy Kennedy's on the call here from our programme team. Generally speaking, what we do is at this stage of the year, look at our funding envelope that is available. So we'll look at the rental income that we project to have, look at the funding envelope available as we work our way through the year. So we set a programme based on that, and then as we work our way through the year, if other funding becomes available, if we look at, for example, the current year and we think that maybe we can't deliver and we need to programme money into the reserve, we do that, then that can be used to increase the programme within the year. We don't really know where that sits. We set our budgets around February time. We will look at the whole programme. We'll look at what we can deliver, what we can procure, and we always have the flexibility to add to programme if we need to between now and year end, but that will really depend on the funds we have available. So we'll try and balance everything, see if we can if we have additional funding and add that into programme. And as I say, we have flexible approach to procurement where we can do that at very short notice.
Sure.
And point system, that's departmental, yeah, and we work with the system that's there.
Okay, how are you, Karen? Yeah, that's what I've left to myself here. Two questions. I was just looking here, if sustainable homes, band-aid sustainable homes, should all new homes not be sustainable? Come into that.
Shamia, do you want to come in there with the sustainable point?
All new houses are very high standard now. Anyway, so they are.
Yeah.
What do you mean by sustainable homes?
Are you referring to the...
Just I see your officer, Carolyn O'Hare, there, band-aid sustainable homes. I thought all new houses...
So what
you're doing there to me.
So there's a couple of different things. Our sustainable homes team, our department, includes a unit that looks at sustainability.
Insulation and walls.
Insulation and retrofitting properties and looking at pilots as how to, decarbonise our stock and looking at different pilots. But then it also includes our grants team who look at the affordable warranty scheme and disabled facilities grants.
So it's upgrading older houses then?
Yeah, and our Home Energy Conservation Authority role as well. But in terms of new build housing, all new social housing is built to the Housing Association guide standards. So that's a very high standard of sustainability. A lot of the new housing is available at is A rated, you know, so the energy costs for the household will be really low. So
you know, I just wanted to ask that so I understood. The other thing there, I would deal with a bit of disabled people. Support living houses, do you do that at all? Or is that left to Housing Association? I know there's one in Yuri Street, Jill Thursdale was on there in Newcastle. There's a place there that support living there. You know, if somebody's just barely able there, they accommodate on their own. If somebody in there, is that left to Housing Associations to deal with that? Housing Executive don't take anything to do with that whatsoever.
We would work to assess people's needs when they come in. If someone comes in and they indicate that they need supported living, then we would be working very closely with the trust in terms of the creation.
And you'll signpost them to wherever they need to go.
To make sure that they get into the schemes that they would need to get into if their needs are not for general needs house, in which the housing executive would allocate.
Specialist needs.
The specialist needs would be done through normally a panel, which assess and make a recommendation as to who should go into supported living.
Okay, that's okay. That's the rest of the anything I'd written down in the board pretty much asked it. So any other questions? Nope. The online there, I missed. So that sort of brings us to that end, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
Your presentation was very, very informative. So I was hitting through it earlier on today. Well, there's a lot of information. So there's a big task on hands. And to be quite honest with you, I don't envy you. More new houses is what you basically need, so it is. And then discharge, planning, and just because I come from such a rural part of Northern Ireland myself, I'm really surprised at how few rural houses are getting built. Because in the past, if you drive through the countryside, there's maybe, say, half a dozen like what I would call council houses were built randomly here and there, maybe cottages. That seems to have completely stopped now. And whether they're steering everybody into urban areas, but there's a lot of people that want to get into urban areas, you know, they're company people. So is there no way that could be done again, or is it just basically down to planning issues then all the time?
Well, like, Chair, there's a few things, and I think Sinead had probably covered some of that earlier. And we're very, very aware of rural needs in the rural areas. And we think one of the key things for us is working in partnership constantly with the housing associations, making sure that we can try to identify land and development opportunities, working with councils as well, working really closely, as I mentioned earlier, maybe looking at the opportunity for working on public land. So look, we are constantly looking for opportunities, and we recognise the issues. And I think all we can do is continue to work to try and identify the opportunities when we get them. But you're right, the challenges are many. The challenges are many, and we will continue to try and work through those challenges. And can I just say in general, Chair, before we do close up, just a thanks to the members tonight who had kind words for the local teams, because and they do work through really difficult issues. They've really difficult days and times, and I really appreciate those words of support for them, because I think the local teams are absolutely amazing. But we will continue to work in partnership. We, you know, having opportunities like this to just openly ask questions and get the answers, whether they're the answers that maybe we want to give or you want to hear, you know, we will try and do whatever we can to help and to keep working in partnership and keep the dialogue open. And I think that's really important. I think that actually starts at the local area as well. So look, just a thanks to all the members tonight, because I think it's been a very useful and respectful discussion.
Okay, thank you very much to you and your team. So that brings the meeting to an end, so safe home everyone.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.